Welcome back in. Final hour of the Abe TL Show starts right now here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Appreciate anyone who's been out there listening at home or in the car on the Odyssey app, smart speaker, or just a good old-fashioned radio dial, baby. Thanks for hanging out with us here on a Saturday afternoon. Appreciate you listening. It's always great to you know, I mentioned it earlier today, went out and hosted the Hawks watch party last night. Had a number of listeners come out and join the show and join the party there. Had Toby hang out with me, a dude from Chamblee. And I think another guy's name was Liam, chatting real quick. And then, Matt this morning, who said he's a listener, he was running the polar opposite, found me right past the finish line, said, what's up? It's really cool to hear everyone who listens and enjoys the show, appreciates the show. And look, you might not always agree with me. In fact, it's probably healthy that you don't always agree with me. I'm a psycho. But everyone, for the most part, keeps it respectful. And I think that's healthy and that's good. A couple of updates I want to provide for you here. We are at halftime at this matchup in Tampa Bay. The Steelers, what am I saying? I see Dom walk in. I immediately want to trash his team. We'll trash them later. Don't worry about it. The Buccaneers right now leading 13-7 at halftime. Panthers have not developed a run game at all, and I think that's one of the big issues. Bryce Young is not a guy that you're just going to task with beating you. Rico Dowdle, 5 carries, 6 yards. Chuba Hubbard, 1 carry, no gain. Bryce Young, 1 carry, lost a yard. Carolina's got to run the ball in the second half if they're going to want to win this game. They are starting the ball, the half with the ball. So an opportunity to potentially drive to take a lead here. Really interesting moment here for Bryce Young. I think it's a big game for him. I don't know what that franchise is going to do in his future. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but I just don't know how you get in on that. But I'll keep you updated. It is 13-7 now at halftime. Again, if you're looking for this game, maybe you just popped in your car. This game is airing on our sister station, WAOK. What is that, 1380 on the AM dial. I'll keep you updated. I'd appreciate it if you stood, stuck here and kept listening to me. But if you are specifically looking for that game or the game tonight, Seahawks and Niners, WAOK is where it's going to be. In the meantime, you've got me, and then you've got Hawks basketball. We're going to talk about the Hawks a little bit in our next segment. But as I like to do usually on the Abe TL Show, if we have a long enough show, if we got enough time, a couple stories I want to touch on. Maybe you seen it, maybe you didn't. Some national stories going on. It's a segment I call Outside the Perimeter. Just some quick thoughts on some national stories, headlines, topics going on there. And one of them that we saw play out a little bit on Thursday and is continuing to play out is what's going on between the coaching staff members at Ole Miss / LSU. And I say / because I'm not entirely sure who works for who right now and how that could change. And the transfer portal's now open. Lane Kiffin, I know, no longer works for Ole Miss. What about some of those guys that were coaching in that quarterfinal win for Ole Miss over Georgia? Charlie Weiss and some others, Charlie Weiss Jr. and others. Are they going to be allowed to coach in the semifinals? At some point, Lane Kiffin needs his staff there. But they're 2 games away from winning a national championship. And Pete Golding, the head coach at Ole Miss, is unsure of what members of his current coaching staff are going to be available in this game. That's not a good situation, and it could turn ugly. At some point, Lane Kiffin might have to put his foot down and say, hey, I need you to work on your new job, your current job. And so, no, you cannot continue coaching Ole Miss. And that could go 2 ways. you might have a number of guys that come out and say, hey, look, I get it. I understand. I'm with you. Is there any coach on that staff who's going to say, I'm sorry, I got a coach in the semifinal game, and if that means that you don't bring me aboard, then so be it. Because if I'm Charlie Weiss Jr., are you willing to risk your OC job at LSU to stay on at Ole Miss for a national championship? Maybe.
Do you, just speaking of Kiffin, do you agree with the notion in the narrative that Kiffin might have just walked away from his best chance at winning a national championship?
I mean, I don't know. It's impossible to tell. I mean, Brendan Sorsby, the Cincinnati quarterback, is going to visit LSU tomorrow. You get him. Cam Coleman's in the discussion over there. Like, they'll put together a team.
Yeah,
I mean, I get it. Right. Like, could they have won a title this year? I guess. I mean, you're two games away at this point. Up until they beat Georgia, I would have said no. I don't think Ole Miss can win a championship.
Yeah,
exactly. Now it's different, and they still might not. And so we'll see. I do wonder if there's going to be any members of that staff who at this point say, thanks but no thanks to Lane Kiffin. I've got to stay on and coach. And Lane says, fine, you don't have your job at LSU anymore. And maybe they understand that. And maybe Pete Golden gives them a job. Maybe not. I don't know. But it's an ugly situation created by the movement of the head coach in the midst of a playoff run. And I don't know how it could have worked out differently. It's not an ideal situation. No one's saying it is. I just don't know how it would have worked out any different. And I don't mean the results. I mean, I don't know how you can avoid what's happening right now. LSU needs their head coach to be their head coach. And that head coach needs his staff to get to work. You're in an important time right now with the portal open. They got to figure it out. And so it's not good. And I don't think either side would want it to be this way. The reality is he needs his staff to work the portal. He was fine letting him coach one more game. And I think there's probably some sort of middle ground. Maybe. I don't know. I think ultimately he's going to let him coach. But it's not a good situation. Televised sports. The ratings are through the roof. And I was surprised by one of the sports leagues promoting their own ratings. I mean, I'm not surprised they promote their own ratings, but I'm surprised at what the numbers were. We knew the NFL drew 20-plus million on Christmas Day. The Pop-Tart Bowl, the highest-rated bowl game, and it was a lot of people.
Hell yeah.
Bowl ratings are way up. And for a game that was an early, not a primetime game, it was 4 p.m. or whatever it was, between Georgia Tech and BYU, not two of the most top-tier programs, Pop-Tart Bowl, the highest-rated bowl game, outside of the college football playoffs that system. Yeah. Highest-rated bowl game. So outstanding work by them. How about this, though?
I was going to say, I think that shows you what it really does when everyone commits to the bit and just has fun with
it. Well, and look, it wasn't just the Pop-Tarts Bowl, then every other bowl game's way down.
Exactly.
There were a number of games that were way up.
Yeah.
But Pop-Tarts Bowl, I did find it fascinating. That was the one, you know, not Michigan, Texas, or whatever the other ones. But yeah, anyways. I did find this fascinating. The NBA put out their ratings for their five games on Christmas Day, best ratings in 15 years. With 2.5 of those games going head-to-head with NFL. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I thought the NFL would absolutely obliterate, and from a numbers perspective, they did obliterate it.
Right.
In terms of the numbers. I thought it would obliterate the chance the NBA had at ratings altogether, and it did not.
I was going to say, because last year, that was kind of the narrative, was that like the NBA put on a good show and there were good games, but like the ratings were completely skewed in the other way, and it was very clear that the NFL just dominated.
Yeah.
This year, it was very
best different. In 15 years, and 13 of those years, they didn't have NBA competition on Christmas Day. Quick update, the Carolina Panthers able to get down the field, but they just missed a field goal to the left. It may have nicked the upright, but the outside of the upright either way, it wasn't going in. And so this is still a 13-7 game, still one possession, so still anyone's ball game there in Tampa. All right, this last one is something that I've been on the forefront of. How old am I? 40? For 18 years. I've been on the forefront of this discussion, and finally, a school has spoken out about it. Members of the Nebraska basketball team have asked their fans to stop storming the court after every ranked win. Not because it is a safety concern, although I'm sure part of that is relevant. I've said this for 18 years. I go way back into my old Gmail account. I wrote down the rules to rushing the court. I had like 20 rules of when you can and cannot rush the court. And one of the premises behind like six of those rules was that it's disrespectful to your own team that you didn't believe they could win that game going in. Because when you rush the court, it's not just about an upset. Higher-ranked team beats a lower-ranked team. It's about an upset that you didn't think was possible. And the Nebraska guys came out and said, hey, guys, this is starting to get, you know, to become a regular occurrence here. We're
act
beating
like
a lot of ranked
before.
Teams.
Yep.
Maybe you should believe in us. Maybe you shouldn't be surprised we're able to win this game. I've always thought there was a level of disrespect for rushing the floor in a game that you could or should win.
Mm-hmm. I think it's circumstantial.
I think if you're taking out a number one ranked, well, I don't know if they're number one yet, but Michigan, who is blowing out
everybody.
Yeah.
They are blowing out top 20 teams. The Michigan Wolverine squad, if you're not paying attention, I think they're still ranked number two. They are obliterating squads. But Nebraska beat like a team ranked 14th the other day. And they rushed the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, all right, and it just got to the point where the fan they came out in the postgame presser and was like, guys, when will y'all believe we can win these games? Stop rushing the court. This isn't some monumental victory. We're a good team. And I've always felt that way. I've always felt there was a little twinge of, we didn't believe y'all could win this game. And Nebraska's saying, y'all start believing we can win and stop making this something it's not.
Yeah.
Not some monumental upset. We're good, guys. And they are good, by the way. They're a top 25 team. That is
this,
if they can keep it on the rails, they're going to be headed to the NCAA tournament.
Like I said, this is to be expected.
Maybe. They got a tough schedule coming.
At least that's the message.
I think that's the other thing is they are playing a lot of ranked teams coming up. And they're like, we're going to do this every time we go home.
Right.
Can we stop this? But Nebraska's a good basketball team. Indiana's a good football team. Who knew? All right. Got a lot to talk about. We're going to actually continue a quick bit of college basketball conversation. Georgia Tech played today. Want to update you on what happened with both of those teams. Talk a little bit of the Atlanta Hawks and then maybe some college football. If not, we'll get to it at 6:40. So stick around. It's Abe Gordon, the Abe TL Show. Two segments left here before we hand things off to Atlanta Hawks basketball on Sports Radio 929 The Game in the Odyssey app. Welcome back in. 92.9 The Game, the Abe TL Show. Hanging with you till 7 o'clock, watching NFL football right now, watching NFL football later tonight, too. Going to get home, take Chipper out, and settle in before we get kickoff of that battle for the number one seed in the NFC and the crown of NFC West champions. I want to continue a little bit of the college basketball conversation that we were having there, not in regards to Nebraska, but just in general. Georgia and Georgia Tech in action today. Let's just start real quick with Georgia Tech. A little bit more to say about the Georgia Bulldogs. Georgia Tech, their first win in the ACC today. They beat Boston College at home. They outscored them by 9 in the second half. They had a halftime lead there, 27-24. But they moved to 10-5, 1-1 in the ACC. There does Georgia Tech. Lamar Washington, big game for him today for the Yellow Jackets. So nice to see them rebound. They had a really close competitive game, a loss to Duke a couple of days ago. I think they were like 20-something point underdogs, and it was a tight loss. So there you go. Georgia had one of the weirdest wins today that I can remember in college basketball. Georgia beats Auburn 104 to 100 in overtime. Now, this is not the Bruce Pearl Auburn. This is a Stephen Pearl coached Auburn team. They are unranked. They're pretty good, but they're not, you know, they're not what they have been in terms of top 15 perennially and player of the year candidates. And, you know, they're not going to win a title this year. They're not in that discussion, at least not right now. It's a good win for Georgia. Nothing we're going to go crazy about. Again, it's not the same Auburn. But this is now a Georgia team that is 13-1 overall. You could probably make an argument in their one loss they could have won. They get their first SEC win today. It was weird because of how regulation finished. Georgia was up, I want to say it was 92-88. They were up four with 4 seconds left in Auburn inbounding the ball. Auburn comes down, and I don't know what the plan was for Georgia, what the coach told them to do, but I know what happened. And they fouled an Auburn shooter, up four. Let me remind you, up four. They fouled an Auburn shooter in the process of a three-point attempt. Now, you're up four. This was a 0.7 seconds remaining. You are up four. Now, there's two ways to coach this. With 4 seconds left, there's two ways to coach this. You will foul the guy and send him to the line for two before he's shooting a three. It's option one. With 4 seconds left, the other option, just let him shoot the ball. Just let him make the shot. I guess Georgia couldn't decide which option they wanted to go with and split the difference. They fouled him while he was shooting a three. So with 0.7 seconds, makes the first free throw, 92-89. Makes the second free throw, 92-90. Misses the third free throw. Ball's on the left side of the rim. Two Georgia players are boxing out a lone Auburn player right on the low block on the left side. All three players sky for the rebound. And the ball bounces just barely out of their reach. No one touches it. An Auburn player swings around to the left wing where the ball has now bounced on the floor. And in one motion, while guarded, there is a guy there. He had to do it. In his face, in 0.7 seconds, collects a bouncing rebound and swishes, I don't know, a 14-footer. And we head to overtime. I got to give credit to Georgia, who at one point trailed in overtime, I want to say it was by four, may have been just by three, for holding it together.
Yeah.
Because on the precipice of that being a win, now you've got to gear up for 5 more minutes of ball. Getting it done in overtime was still very impressive. This is a very good Georgia team. Jeremiah Wilkinson, 31 points. And this is the second straight game for Marcus Millender coming off of the bench where he's been big time. 24 off the bench, 5 of 7 for 3 from Millender. He had a big performance earlier in the week as well. They're going to play the Georgia Bulldogs in their next SEC game. The Florida Gators. I believe that's a ranked matchup. I think Florida's still ranked. So they play tonight. So you know, they got to win that one to stay ranked if in fact they still are. Gotta close that game out differently. You can't be up four under a second and go to overtime.
Like there's a million ways you win that game and only one
way. It's only one way to lose it. And they tried.
Like how does that happen?
And again, always foul up three. You want to go through that, that's fine.
Yeah,
up four, let him take the shot.
Do whatever you want. Yeah, shoot.
At that point, even if he drills it, which he did, Or, sorry, you fouled him, so he didn't get a chance. Even if he drills it, you're up one, and all you got to do
is inbound and make two free throws.
No, you don't even have to make two free throws. There's 7/10 of a second.
Oh, yeah, there's 7/10. Yeah.
Just literally inbound the ball.
And the game's over.
Bat it anywhere. Do anything. And the game's over. The one thing you couldn't do was put him on the line for three. You want to put him on the line for two? I get it. You want to just let him drill it? That's fine, too. By the way, it's college basketball. The chance he's actually drilling it, even an open three, probably forced, likely off balance.
Not a high quality shot.
And I've seen the comments, oh, it was a cheap foul, it was light contact. It can be no contact is how I would play it. No contact. Either way, Georgia does get the win, and so good for them. Atlanta Hawks basketball. It's an interesting situation we're headed towards with the Hawks. They got a back-to-back. Got a nice win yesterday over the New York Knicks. It was two wins in two games back for Kristaps Porzingis. He is out tonight, along with Trey and Luke Kennard. Again, back-to-back. And Trey hadn't been available for a little while. He came back and then got hurt a different injury, quad contusion now. They held a team to 101 in a win earlier this week in Kristaps' return. 102 when they beat the Timberwolves to end the 7-game losing streak. And then 99 against the Knicks. I don't know what to make of that yet. I think the sample size on that's a little small. Has the return of Porzingis gotten the defense going again? Maybe. Because they were giving up 130 a night and 140 and 150 on some nights. And so we'll see what they got tonight in a back-to-back. And they're in Toronto, and then they're actually staying in Toronto and are going to play the Raptors a second time on Monday. So they are playing three games in four nights, but without travel between games two and game three. What are they going to do with Trae Young? And this has been a very hot topic for a number of years here in Atlanta. Can you win with Trae as a focal point, even on the team? Does the offense change when Trey's there? Is he the worst member negatively impactful on your defense? Look, we've had all those discussions. I'm not even there anymore. The question now in regards to Trae Young, because I think they've probably come to the conclusion that the future of this franchise does not include Trae Young.
Yeah.
The question now is, how is he most valuable to you at this point? And I don't think there's any good answers. And I think you've put yourself in a potentially real bad situation. And Caleb Johnson detailed this a little bit on his show. Caleb, of course, our Hawks reporter here at 92.9 The Game. He had a fascinating, insightful discussion earlier. Trade deadline, February 5. What can you get for Trae? And that's what concerns me. I don't know how many teams still view Trae as that max value player. I don't think you're getting high quality draft picks for him. You have to get players that come close to matching salaries, as is the NBA rules. And I think you're in real trouble if you cannot trade him. I'm not even sure if the discussion now is, do you want to trade him? And look, I've said for a long time, I'm fine if they want to keep Trae and build with him. I'm fine if they move on from him. I don't think it makes or breaks necessarily. I'm not... I'm straddling the fence. I'm not
You're fine with either route.
Heavy into either side.
Mm-hmm.
The question now is, if you want to move on from Trae, can you? Are there teams that still value Trey at that level? And here's the real problem. And I was talking with Caleb Alfair about it. If you cannot trade Trey, and he's on your roster through the end of this year, what is his value in free agency? Because you might just sit here and say, hey, just let him go. Play out the rest of the year and let him go. He'll go somewhere in free agency. Don't forget he's got a player option. I know we've all just kind of sat here and said this is Trey's last year. What if it's not? Because his player option and the number Caleb gave me, and I believe Caleb is accurate, I don't think Caleb would mislead or be wrong about this, is $48 million. Is Trey going to get $48 million from a team? And look, there's a chance that Trey's had enough here, and maybe he goes somewhere else, even at a lower cost. There's also a chance that $48 million is very close to $50 million, and Trey wants to make $50 million. And so maybe he does choose to pick up his option, remain here in Atlanta. And again, I'm not saying that would be a bad thing. All I'm suggesting is you may not have the control as a franchise over $48 million of your salary as you think. How is he viewed around the league? Is he still viewed? Because there was a time I would say, look, I understand whether or not you want to keep Trey or not. There are teams that want him and will pay highly for him. I don't know if that's still the case. It might be. Yeah. It might be.
It doesn't seem like it.
I don't think you're going to get what you want to get in a trade. And I don't think it's a lock that he just walks away from his player option at the end of the year. And so you might have Trey and $48 million coming back next year. I don't know. But it was something I hadn't overly seriously considered until recently, that if as a franchise you've come to the conclusion that you're ready to move on, you may not be the ones making that decision. Just something to think about as we head towards the trade deadline. And there might be value in just, if the plan is to move on from Trey, there might be value in just moving him no matter what. Whatever you can get in return. Anything to make a deal work. We'll see. Today's Saturday, January 3rd. Trade deadline essentially a month away, February 5th. Going to be interesting to see. All right, when we come back, we'll wrap things up. We'll preview a little bit more week 18 in the NFL and some early thoughts on the college football playoff semifinals, Miami and Ole Miss, Oregon and Indiana, right here in our backyard of the Peach Bowl. A lot still to come. It's the Abe TL Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes. Abe Gordon here, the Abe TL Show. And I know in a couple of, final segment, the show will go off air. We'll hand things off to Atlanta Hawks basketball. But if you want to continue the conversation after hours, and keep it clean, even though I said after hours. Come on. At Abe Gordon on social media, on the Twitter there. X, whatever you want to call it. At Abe Gordon. Buccaneers boot a field goal. It is back to now a two-possession game, just a little bit into the fourth quarter. Plenty of time left for Carolina, but they're going to need a response at some point. They are down 16-7 in this one. And, you know, we can actually go ahead and get into it. This is only one of a number of games with something really at stake here in Week 18. Now, obviously, the winner of this game has an opportunity to win the division. But if it is Tampa, and I'm not telling you guys something you don't already know, it's actually the Atlanta Saints game tomorrow, that will decide the division. I said it early on. I'm rooting for that. I want both of these teams and their fan bases to have to watch Saints-Falcons either pulling for or against Atlanta. for Carolina to be desperate for the Falcons to win is funny. It's great. And so we'll see if that's the case. That is the case if Tampa Bay holds on. If somehow the Panthers find a comeback and win this game, they win the division. And tomorrow's game for the Falcons won't be a deciding factor. It will decide the Falcons' spot in the seeding. They're not seeding, but where they finish in the division. But there you go. That's not the only one, though. The number one seed in the NFC / the NFC West champion will be decided tonight between Seattle and San Francisco. I think both of these teams could potentially win a Super Bowl. I mentioned it earlier. If San Francisco were healthy, they'd be the best team in the NFL. They lost Mykal Williams and Bosa and a couple of guys in the secondary, Fred Warner. If they were healthy, they would be the best team in the NFL. Trent Williams has been banged up all year. Never had Brandon Ayuk for whatever reason. Ricky Pearsall's in and out of the lineup. He might be out tomorrow or tonight. I don't know. I know he had banged up his knee. He's a tough guy. He might try and go. Remember, he got shot and came back like a month later. He's a tough guy. And a little tweak of the knee ain't going to stop me. You know what I mean? But that's a big one tonight. Number one seed in the AFC up for grabs still. The Broncos, the Patriots, and the Jaguars all still alive. Denver in the driver's seat in that one. They're hosting the Chargers. The Chargers have decided not to play Justin Herbert. They have an atrocious offensive line. And so heading into the playoffs, maybe not let that guy take 30 hits from the NFL's one of the two or three best defenses in Denver. Probably a smart play. So Denver in the driver's seat to win the number one seed in the AFC. You all know Sunday Night Football, Ravens and Steelers. AFC North and the last open playoff spot on the line. Winner gets the 4 seed. Loser has a decision to make about their head coach. In theory. I don't think either team should move on from their head coaches, but I can understand, certainly in Pittsburgh, if they feel the time has come and gone, you're going to have to restart at quarterback. It's probably Aaron Rodgers last year. If you wanted to start over with a whole new unit, a whole new regime, I could understand. Definitely less so about Baltimore. I know there's frustration. You probably could have won a championship in the past couple of seasons. This year was lost. Between one performance and two Lamar Jackson's injuries, this is just a lost year.
I was going to say, some people will say, oh, you're a Steelers fan and you always complain. But, Ravens fans complaining about
Harbaugh
this year.
You were a drop tight end pass away from, you know what I mean? It was
you
there.
You started off the season 1-5 and Lamar missed, 4 games this year. And you have a chance to win the division and still go to the playoffs.
Well, but it's less about that. And even the Steelers, they don't care about winning a division.
It's a grand scheme
you're not a real threat.
Exactly.
And you need to be a threat when you have an MVP. So I get it, Lamar. But that's what's up for grabs in that one. We'll see who wins. Real quick, just in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
If you lose this game, are you ready to start over with someone other than Tomlin?
I've been ready for a few years. I think this year it would absolutely be the case. To me, it makes – because, again, look at everything that happened. The Ravens started off 1-5. Joe Burrow missed essentially half the season. The Cleveland Browns started 3 different quarterbacks this year, and you still couldn't find a way to win this division? That, to me, is insane.
And honestly, even if they won the division and get knocked
get
out the first game of the playoffs,
or the Bills.
If you're going to move on, I don't know if winning this game or losing this game makes the difference.
Right. It really
shouldn't. I think it's more about where are we as a franchise and are we pressing a restart button and where do we go from there? Turnover for Carolina. They tried some sort of flea flicker. Looked like Rico Dowdle slipped as he turned to throw the ball back. Again, it's been raining all day in Tampa. He slips as he goes to throw the ball back. Doesn't quite get to Bryce Young, and it's a turnover. That's not on Bryce Young. That's on Rico Dowdle. Just eat it at that point.
Is it a Panthers thing where quarterbacks don't jump on the ball?
No.
I mean, Bryce Young
jumped on it. He tried. It was there. No, he tried. He was there. He didn't shy up. He went after the ball. He didn't get it, but he went after it. So don't start that crap.
All right.
Don't give me that. AFC South title on the line. Could be the Jaguars. Could be Houston. Jaguars right now in the driver's seat. They are playing the Titans. And Houston needs the Titans to beat Jacksonville. Then they have to handle their own business and beat the Colts in that one. Riley Leonard starting for the Colts, I believe. So there you go. You already know about the NFC South. Number one draft pick still up for grabs. I know the Giants won a game last week that handed the edge to the Raiders. The Raiders playing the Chiefs. And if the Raiders lose to the Chiefs, they will have the number one draft pick. The Chiefs are using like their fifth quarterback. And their backup, I mean, I've never heard of these guys. So, never say never. Never say never. But we'll see. I think a couple of other things up for grabs here in Week 18, not in terms of seeding, playoffs, or any of that. I think Coach of the Year could be up for grabs. I think if Shanahan wins tonight, he's the NFL Coach of the Year. I think you can make arguments for Vrabel or Mike McDonald.
Throw Ben Johnson in there.
Ben Johnson, sure. I think if Shanahan wins tonight, he's the Coach of the Year. MVP? Matthew Stafford took a pretty big hit. Mm-hmm. Maybe an award-defining loss performance for Stafford in a game in which Atlanta picked him off three times. You just never know what happens in Week 18 or how much it matters. Drake May, I think, has the edge right now. What if he throws three tomorrow and Stafford goes for five tutties? I don't even know. They said that Stafford's going to play. We'll see. So it feels like it's Drake May, but who knows?
Yeah.
Offensive player of the year, maybe up for grabs. Maybe in the same game. It feels like, based on most of the odds I've seen, your top two candidates are Jackson Smith and Jigba and Christian McCaffrey. Obviously facing off each other. Certainly for the Niners to win, I think they need a big game for McCaffrey. Maybe that could push him to the forefront. I know Puka Nacua is in the discussion as well, but I think he's right now kind of the trending third place.
Yeah.
It's probably not by much. Yeah. It depends what McCaffrey's got. So there you go. So looking forward to that. Real quick, we got a couple of minutes left. The semifinals are set with one game taking place here in Atlanta on Friday, the other one Thursday night. Out in Glendale/Phoenix, the Fiesta Bowl, both at 7:30, both on ESPN. Miami and Ole Miss is the first one. And for Miami, it's about consistency, as it really has been all year. If they come anywhere close to reproducing the effort that they showed against the Buckeyes, they're going to win this game. And we still don't know what the situation is for the Ole Miss coaching staff and who's going to be available, courtesy of Lane Kiffin and LSU. I don't know. We'll have a couple. I really hope this wouldn't be the situation that costs Ole Miss a real shot at a championship. Is there's a complete disintegration of their coaching staff from a play calling standpoint? We'll see what happens. We'll see. But for Miami, it's about the consistency. Dominate on offense up front. Dominate on defense up front. Get Fletcher and Tony going. Try not to ask Carson Beck to do too much, and you're going to win this game. Play like you did against the Buckeyes. You're going to win this game. Oregon and Indiana, a game we've seen once. Indiana looks relatively similar, close to the same. I don't know if Oregon does. I did not expect that level of defensive performance from the Ducks against Texas Tech. How much of that was about Texas Tech, potentially the rust discussion? Honestly, a lack of playmakers on that Texas Tech team. And how much of it was about Oregon and what they can do defensively. And for Oregon, because Indiana, I think, just needs to keep doing what they're doing. They're running the ball well. They're getting the ball into the hands of playmakers. Fernando Mendoza, 14 of 16 for three touchdowns. He was outstanding after winning Heisman his first game back. For Oregon, potentially getting Evan Stewart back. What's he going to look like? How good can he be? How impactful on that offense can he be? Because I remember in the summer when he went down, I said, well, that's it for Oregon. He was one of the top returning playmakers in all of college football. And I thought that was going to cost Oregon a real shot at a championship. They're still alive. he might be back. Let's see what they've got. I think Miami beats Ole Miss. I think Indiana beats Oregon, but we'll see. And that game's right here on Friday night. I'm also going to be hosting a Hawks watch party that Friday, but the Hawks are playing out west, so a little bit of a later tip there against Denver. That's going to be at right here in Midtown at the Hudson Grill here in Midtown. So that's Friday night, 9 o'clock. So I'll invite all of you out to that one as well. Hawks about to get in action tonight. Unfortunately, Trae Young is out, as we know. Porzingis is also out. Maybe there's more illness stuff. Maybe it's just a back-to-back. And you're saving them up for Monday. Both games in Toronto, tonight and Monday in Toronto. Luke Kennard also ruled out. So going to be shorthanded tonight. Another triple-double for Jalen last night. Dyson has been playing very well and smart distributing the ball. So we'll see those two guys can maybe get it going. Onyeka Okongwu shot well last night as well. So that's going to do it for the Abe TL show here tonight. Appreciate Josh Hagedorn and Dom Chorosky running the board for me. Hawks basketball is up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.